Welcome back, everyone. Next, we're going to hear from Leanne Thorison. Leanne is a senior attorney at Bradley Arant, where she counsels companies on sensitive employment law matters and defends employers in a wide range of employment-related claims. Today, Leanne will discuss why retaliation claims are the most dangerous causes of action and what employers can do to defend against these claims. Leanne, please take it away.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. So, like Nicole said, today I'm going to talk about why retaliation is the most dangerous cause of action and how companies can protect themselves. So, 20 years ago, employees filed roughly 22,000 retaliation charges with the EEOC, and that's across all statutes. For 2023, employees filed 46,000 charges of retaliation, which is an increase of over 50%. And I love this quote. I think it's so appropriate for retaliation claims. Before you embark on a journey of revenge, dig two graves. So, with retaliation claims, it's not just the employee that's getting burned, it's the employer too. So, this slide just has some interesting statistics of charges filed with the EEOC over the past 5 years. And although you can tell from these numbers that the number of overall EEOC charges has gone way up, the percentage of charges containing retaliation claims has remained fairly consistent over the past 5 years. There have been a little bit of fluctuation, but for the most part, it's been in the mid 50%. So, why do claimants include claims of retaliation? First of all, they are usually tied to other claims, but they also tend to resonate more with juries and can lead to bigger recoveries. And I'll talk about some examples of recoveries a little bit later. Also, note, you can have a really weak underlying claim, but still succeed on a claim of retaliation. So, for example, you have an employee, Sarah, who complains of sexual harassment. The company investigates her claim and finds it completely unsubstantiated, but not maliciously filed. However, the company terminates Sarah 2 weeks after she files her complaint for performance issues, which, of course, are not substantiated by her personnel file. So, in other words, the company didn't document these supposed performance issues. The company is going to have a very hard time beating a claim of retaliation because Sarah engaged in protected activity by making a complaint of sexual harassment and then was terminated shortly thereafter on what appear to be weak grounds given the lack of documentation. So, you have an adverse employment action plus a causal connection here. And that's even if she's unable to succeed on her underlying claim of sexual harassment. So, what are the elements of retaliation claims? First, you have protected activity. And examples of that, which we commonly think of, are making a claim of discrimination, participating in an investigation into claims of harassment, stuff like that. You have to have knowledge. So, the decision maker must have knowledge of the protected activity. In other words, a defense to a claim of retaliation is that the decision maker was unaware of the protected activity. There has to be adverse action. And so we commonly think of termination, demotion, reduction in pay, written discipline as examples of adverse action. There are ones that are less obvious. For example, an employee being reassigned to a supervisor where they believe that supervisor has less opportunities for advancement and promotion. Potentially being moved from a desirable office to a less desirable office. Let's say you have, a corner office with a window and you're moved to an interior office. Getting a schedule change that perhaps moves you from a desirable schedule to a less desirable schedule. All those are examples of potentially adverse action. Finally, there has to be a causal connection. So the closer the adverse action is in temporal proximity to the protected activity, the harder it is to overcome a claim that the actions were not connected. So, for example, it is much easier to argue that an adverse action that occurs a year after protected activity is not causally connected versus one that occurs weeks or even a few months after. So, what is protected activity? I talked through some of these examples, but here they are again: making an internal complaint, filing a complaint with governmental authorities, participating in an investigation, and that's not just a complainant potentially, but a witness participating in an investigation would also be covered. Supporting another employee's complaint, requesting an accommodation. So that could be an accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act, or it could be a religious accommodation. Requesting or taking leave, again, that could be leave under the ADA. It could be leave under the Family Medical Leave Act, or it could be leave under various state laws.